ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
सत्वं हरेव अनुद्यातस्
सत्वं हरेव अनुद्यातस्
तत्पुंसन्नपि वद्यं कृतवान् अनुशिक्षं सतं व्रतम्
अनुशिक्षं सतं व्रतम्
सत्वं हरेरनुद्यातस्
सत्वं हरेरनुद्यातस्
तत्पुंसमपि समता
तत्पुंसमपि समता
कथं त्वा वद्यं कृतवान्
कथं त्वा वद्यं कृतवान्
अनुशिक्षं सतं व्रतम्
अनुशिक्षं सतं व्रतम्
तत्त्वं हरे अनुज्ञातः
सत्त्वं हरे
Thank you. that person,
from you.
Hare,
Hare,
by the Supreme Lord.
By the Supreme Lord.
Anugyataha.
Anugyataha.
Some always remember.
We always remember.
So, here, who is speaking? Raise your hand. Who is speaking?
Yes.
Swayambhuva Manu. And what is his relationship with Dhruva Maharaj? And what has happened just before this? What has happened just before this?
Dhruva actually is fighting the Yakshas.
Yes.
And then Swayambhuva Manu is very angry that his brother was killed, Uttama, by the Yakshas because of the
Swayambhuva Manu is angry?
Dhruva.
Dhruva Maharaj, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He killed so many Yakshas unnecessarily with the anger.
Yes.
And then Swayambhuva Manu coming and telling him that this is not very good, this anger.
Yes. But he's not telling him that the anger is so good, but he's telling him that the result of the anger is not good. Look what you're doing. Because one yaksha has acted and killed your brother Uttam, so many innocent yakshas are suffering and being killed. So this first line of the verse here, oh, but what happened right before that? This is, in one sense, the most important thing. What happened before that?
He was
you have to raise your hand though. But you're looking at your phone.
I'm not looking
good. Oh. Would they allow you in the examinations in the university? You're just holding it. I'm not looking. My eyes are looking. I know that. Okay, what happened before then? Very, very, very important, yes. What happened after that? Yes. Were you raising your hand or were you? Yes.
So before that.
No, after that. Otherwise, we'll start with
Dhruva
the beginning of existence.
Dhruva Maharaj went through Yakshas and there were so many illusions were created by Yakshas.
Yes, there's so many illusions created by the Yakshas. And then what happened?
Did all the sages
came? Not that you're not raising, you are raising your hand, I should say. Raise your hand and wait to be called on. I'm in trouble now. But you sometimes don't call on each other, okay? Okay. We're old friends, it's okay. Okay, we'll ask a Mahatma.
Dhruva Maharaj took all the Narayan.
Okay. In between the Yakshas throwing their illusion and him taking out his Narayan Yaksha, something very important happened. Something extremely important happened, which is very instructive for all of us.
The sages.
Next, okay, we get the next question.
The sages instructed Dhruva about the glories of the holy name?
Yes. The sages instructed Dhruva Maharaj about the glories of the holy name. And what did they say? Do you remember?
They said that the holy name is so powerful, you can just chant the names and then all this illusion will be gone.
All the illusion would go away. Now, if the holy name is chanted, and then Dhruva took out his Narayanastra, and then the illusion was dissipated. Now, it's very interesting. This also, something like this happens in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam too, when Indra is fighting with Bali Maharaj and the demons. And when they're losing, losing when Pali Maharaj and the king, they also pulled out their magic powers to try to defeat the devatas, the demigods. And Lord Indra became very angry, just like Dhruva became so angry and began destroying them. Now why did they become angry? Did you ever think about that? Why, when they use, now I'll ask you. What, when they were losing, they used their mystical powers. And the great warrior kings, Dhruva Maharaj and Lord Indra, became angry at them for doing that. There was something inappropriate in that. Raise your hand if you know what was inappropriate, yes? Yes, but when you're losing. But in Kshatriya codes, and you find this in the Mahabharata, that if one of the kings or a warrior is disarmed by arrows, they won't just come and kill him. If his chariot is destroyed, he will get off of his chariot and fight with them equally, because they're showing their great strength. So to use something inappropriately to beat someone who is weaker than you, to defeat someone, to kill someone weaker than you, is not something heroic at all. That is cowardice, actually. And the Kshatriyas, they have that spirit. That I am so powerful, they have to have the Ishwara Bhava, Krishna calls it in the Bhagavad Gita. They have to have that spirit. We saw that with Maharaj Prithvi also. When he saw that a bull was beaten by someone dressed as if a king, he immediately pulls out his sword and is ready to kill him. This innocent creature was causing no harm. He was the personification of religiousness. You're harming him. Kill you. This is. I don't have to talk now. Okay. Excuse me. It's about a new house. That's a very quite a. Do you have to talk about a new house right now? Oh, you have to go now. In the middle of the Bhagavatam class, you're going to leave. You have to go to everything. And just when I was going to tell such a story that you... Okay. We will miss you. So the Kshatriyas have to have that spirit because they have to protect. They have to protect the citizens. They have to protect the citizens. And think of them as their own children. Janakai is so powerful. They have to protect the citizens. They have to be willing to risk their life to protect the citizens. When, like the father will risk their life to protect their children, and the mother will too. So when there's a ruler like that, who is so unselfish and so willing to even risk his life to protect the citizens, then the citizens naturally have so much respect, and he's considered like a father. So the world is actually longing for this kind of leadership. And now, you know, everyone just... You say, oh, this person is the president, or this person is the president. We sort of laugh at them, you know. This is actually very unhealthy for society and also for someone's consciousness. Because if we don't feel protected, if we don't have that, the society is supposed to be set up in such a way that all the dependents feel they're protected and are not feeling secure, then it's so much easier for them to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The society is set up in such a way that everyone's mind is prepared to surrender to Krishna. They know, they have a trust in authority, that if Krishna says, I'm going to protect you, I will protect you. With faith in that. So Kali Yuga ruins all that. Authorities become corrupt and untrustworthy. And we laugh about them if there's some corruption. We say, I always knew this was going on. And then it becomes so much more difficult to surrender to Krishna, to surrender to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, everyone is in so much anxiety. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu have come to give us a medicine that is so powerful and can overcome this. And means taking shelter of Krishna's holy names. This is how Sri Jiva Goswami describes them. Purport later on in the commentary later on in the Bhagavatam, it's quoted perhaps in and Kali Yuga is full of anxiety, but there's one good thing about this anxiety. Kirtanadeva. Sometimes the 22nd Avenue, very in the early days of the movement, the devotees would take the cartels and put them on the floor after the kirtan. And Prabhupada said, no, no, no. When we first joined, we learned that these were like the tongues of Krishna, something like that. It sounds funny when I say it now, but because the sound that comes from the tongues is the sound, without the tongues, what can we do without? Without the cartels, very difficult to have kirtan. So this first verse, the first line of the verse, is very important because all these verses are important, but they're based on the point that Dhruva Maharaj had taken shelter of the Lord. And this is the essence. And everything else is how, what we're going to hear now is how to act in this world. Everyone all cough together now. One, two, three. So submissive. Now always remember Krishna. I never forget. So all these instructions, because Swami Bhuvamanu he's providing the instructions so that society can be ruled properly. Without a structure in society, then people do whatever they want to do, and what people want to do is generally going to degrade them. And there is no absolute reference point. So Swami Bhuvamanu gives the Dharma Shastras and the instructions that people can live in society in such a way that they will become elevated in consciousness and not degraded in consciousness. And interestingly enough, in the very beginning of the... What are all the sounds coming out there? What's that one? Is it Narada Muni descending and playing? So that is basically what's going on. Swami Bhuvamanu is instructing on going to instruct Dhruva how to giving us instructions basically through his instructions to Dhruva Maharaj how to live in this world. For devotees, and then in the next verse, something also very wonderful. So the first line of this verse means that for you, a person who is a pure devotee, this is Prabhupada's translation here, but we see it in the word by words, you, Hari anudhyata. You are always being, because you are a pure devotee, and you are always remembering Krishna. That's what it means to be a pure devotee. You're always remembering Krishna. Krishna always remembers you. Because sometimes we worry that if I'm always thinking about Krishna, then who's going to take care of me? And actually, going back to Swami Rupa Manu in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, the purport is short, so I'm taking a little liberty to speak in before about a few things that are very important for the verse in purport. But in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, it described that Swami Rupa Manu, he started to meditate. And there are some prayers, Upanishadic prayers, that he was meditating on the Supreme Lord, basically as the Super Soul. And he was so absorbed in his meditation that he was unaware of everything that was going on around him. So perhaps we worry to some degree that if I'm so absorbed in thinking about Krishna, and I'm serving Krishna, who's going to take care of me in a similar way? And that's just what happened. He was so absorbed, and his eyes were closed in his samadhi meditation, and some rakshasas, some evil human beings who are carnivorous. Do you know what carnivorous means?
Carnivorous is who eats meat.
Yes, flesh. And these were rakshasas, and they even ate people. Now, would you like it if someone came to you and decided they wanted to eat you? No. You'd feel terrible. You'd feel quite frightened. And if they were bigger than you and stronger than you, and more intelligent than you, you couldn't escape. And people do that to the poor animals. It's so sad, so cruel. They use their strength and intelligence in such a hard-hearted way, and it's very sad and inappropriate, and Krishna doesn't like that. So Krishna is thinking of the devotees who are thinking about him. So Swayambhuva Manu was thinking about Krishna, meditating on Krishna, and he was unprotected, and some rakshasas came to eat him. And Krishna came, as Krishna Garba, the same, and Jamyan was called as Krishna Garba, the same Krishna Garba who had come to Dhruva Maharaj earlier to benedict him with his presence. And he killed all the rakshasas. So that's the first line. So wonderful, so reassuring for the devotees, that if I think about Krishna, then Krishna is always thinking about me. Kampaya pratijahini, pratijahini, samegvata. Do you believe this? Krishna is going to take care of you? You don't. Why not? Yes, but he said no, I don't believe. And if Krishna's not going to take care of you, who is going to take care of you? Well, I'll take care of myself. That's everyone's mood and color. I'll take care of myself. But who can take care of himself? Okay. Who can really take care of himself in this world? We're really in the illusion. Even when we think we're taking care of ourselves, we're not actually taking care of ourselves. It's Krishna that's taking care of us. If he's, who's making that? Raise your hand if you're making your heart beat right now. Everyone's getting shy. Well, who's making it beat then? Or the, what do they call the, I can't remember the finance name for it, something that's sympathetic nervous system or something like that. What do you call it? breathe every time. They thought, what is what? Digest your food. The scientists don't know how food is digested. I don't know how my food is digested. But Krishna's grace then suggested, if he wasn't protecting us now, we wouldn't be alive in a physical body. So looking at things from that point, and yet I think I'm doing, putting my hand in the air. So I am putting my hand there, but if all I have to do is think, hand rise into the air, it goes. But how? What is the connection between my thinking, which is subtle, more subtle, and this gross thing moving up into there? And there's hundreds of muscles and the bones sitting on the bones that are required to make this insignificant thing happen. Fingers move. Your foot can go like this. There's so many muscles and tendons and bones that are coordinated. And I'm thinking it's just happening. As soon as what you get hold of and it stops just happening, then you say something's wrong. But it's really that it's always so complicated and it's not us who's doing it. It's actually explained in the ninth chapter of the second canto of the Bhagavad Gita, the combination between Adi Daivata, Adi Bhautika, and Adi Atmika. Three things are required to make all this work. So when we're thinking about Krishna, and this is our position, this is the natural consciousness of every soul, of every person, to think about Krishna with great devotion, gratitude, devotion, and serving mood. And then we are connected properly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes. So the verse continues here. So that was the first line. So he's always remembering. Then, Tat Pum Sam, we're reading the word by words now, by the way. Go back to that. Tat Pum Sam.
Tat Pum Sam.
He's always his devotee. He's remembering his devotee, that person. Api. Also.
Also.
Samatha.
Samatha.
Esteem.
Esteem.
Honored.
Honored.
Ketam.
Ketam.
Why?
Why?
To.
Then.
Avadhyam.
Avadhyam.
Abominable act.
Kritavan,
you have undertaken. So, you're a devotee, a pure devotee. Because you're a pure devotee of the Lord is always thinking of you. And you are also recognized by all His confidential devotees. Your life is meant for exemplary behavior. And then he's saying, then avadyam, abominable act, kitavan, you have undertaken. Now why, when you're supposed to be such an example, are you doing this abominable, terrible, cruel act of killing these innocent yakshas? So he's explaining to him that you shouldn't act in this way. And then the final line, Anushikshan, setting the example. Satam,
of
saintly persons.
Vratam,
of your life is meant to set an example of how a person lives in this world, because you are the king. And, what's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita?
Yes. Yes, Mataji.
I was just a little late on calling on you. So this is the pramana of what it, pramana means, the evidence of the proof of how what is proper action in the world is that the great persons, what they do will be what everyone else follows. This is the proof whether the person is acting properly or not properly, everyone's going to follow their example. So this is a criticism that Swami Bhuvamanu is making. You are known as a pure devotee. You are the king, and what you do, people are going to follow. And what are you doing? It's not appropriate. You're acting in a cruel way, and devotees must act in a kind way, so that because it's natural for devotees to be kind, and it's natural to be considerate, and not to be angry like you are acting. So here's Srila Prabhupada's translation, following directly the Sanskrit. Because you are a pure devotee of the Lord is always thinking of you. And you are all also recognized by all his confidential devotees. Your life is meant for exemplary behavior. I'm therefore surprised, why have you undertaken such an abominable task? Why are you doing this? Please repeat. Because you are a pure devotee of the Lord.
Because you are a pure devotee of the Lord.
The Lord is always thinking of you.
The Lord is always thinking of you.
And you are also recognized by all his confidential devotees. Your life is meant for exemplary behavior.
Your life is meant for exemplary behavior.
I am therefore surprised. Why have you undertaken such an abominable task? Okay, without looking at your phones and iPads, etc., tell me something from this verse that you remember. But raise your hands. Who remembers something from this verse? Yes. Someone who's enthusiastic. Yes. Because you are a devotee. The Lord is always thinking of you. Remember this. What do you think about that point? Yes. Are you going to answer my question? What do you think about that point? Yes.
If you think of the Lord will think of you.
Yes.
And like if you move one step, one small step toward him, you move like 20 big steps towards you.
Yes. And because we are all little, not only you, all we have the capacity to do is move little steps. But because he is known as Rukrama, what incarnation of the Lord is especially known as Rukrama, which basically means big steps. His step can cover the whole universe and go through the universe. And if he takes one step to us, what to speak of how many Krishna Prabhu said? 20 big steps. And then the distance between us and him is covered completely. And otherwise, if we are just relying on our own steps, little steps, because after all, if we're 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size, just imagine how tiny our steps are. You never thought of it that way, did you? Okay, thank you. That was a wonderful point to remember. What else from the verse? Raise your hand. Yes.
Because of the because Krishna is thinking of the devotees are actually very special.
Yeah. something else from me? Yes. Yeah, recognize. What does that mean? Oh, I know you. Not like that. Oh, no. They accept the quality of this person. Great sages also accept this person is very rare. Sāmahāma sadurabha. And what, is, again, is the quality of a pure devotee?
Kindness.
Okay, but what's specifically mentioned here? Because you are a pure devotee, the Prabhupada actually will say in the purport, what is that quality? A pure devotee is always thinking of the Lord. Let me read through the Prabhupada's purport. Now, I'm going to, right after I read it, and it's quite short, I'm going to ask you what you remembered. And the results are going to be posted all over the internet. Just to all you high achievers want to get you inspired. Please listen, because these are instructions that Srila Prabhupada is giving us on this verse, about this verse, but they're instructions for our life, to apply to our life. Dhruva Maharaj was a pure devotee and was accustomed to always thinking of the Lord. Reciprocally, in exchange, the Lord always thinks of those pure devotees who think of Him only 24 hours a day. As a pure devotee does not know anything beyond the Lord, so the Lord does not know anything beyond His pure devotee. Swayambhuva Manu pointed out this fact to Dhruva Maharaj. Quote, not only are you a pure devotee, but you are recognized by all pure devotees of the Lord. You should always act in such an exemplary way that others may learn from you. Under the circumstances, it is surprising that you have killed so many faultless yakshas. Okay. What do you remember? Raise your hands. You are the first and you are the second.
Because Dhruva was a pure devotee. And you used to think of the Lord always used to think of Him.
Yes. Thank you.
The word which really struck me in that sentence was you're accustomed. Yes. It's something which is very natural. It's something which is it's something that you would already think of.
It's a habit. But sometimes we have to learn habits. Like when we tying our shoes, of course no one ties their shoes anymore. They're all wearing Crocs. In the old days, people used to tie their shoes. And after a while, when you're first learning how to... Raise your hand if you know how to tie your shoes. Raise your hand if you can still write with a pen. I almost can't. But after a while, you can do it so easily. You can tie your shoes, you don't even have to think while you're doing it. That means habit. Habit means I'm accustomed to doing it. And this is the best of all habits to develop. So we're so accustomed to think about Krishna. Because the result of that habit, the result of being able to being accustomed to tie your shoes and developing the habit to tie your shoes means that you can effortlessly do it. You wear the shoes when you go out. So there's a benefit in that. And the result of the habit of always thinking of Krishna is the greatest of all possible benefits, that Krishna takes care of you. He will think about you just as he thought about Ajamil, who chanted his name. So that pastime of Ajamil, in which canto of the Bhagavatam? Raise your hand.
Six.
You're so enthusiastic, not only you, but all the devotees are so enthusiastic. But this is called a class. Bhagavatam class. So you have to be on our best behavior. So, Ajamil, one of the is very much kamutya nyaya, which means, that means if this is true, then what a speaker of Bhagavatam. How true it is on a different level. So Ajamil was calling his son, whose name was? Very good. So he was calling his son only, in this room here, are there two people with the same name other than
Krishna and Shyamasundara?
Okay. Are there two people with the same name? Yes. What is your name?
Dhruva.
Dhruva. Okay. Okay.
Krishna.
Okay, but we, yeah. It'll get confusing if we use Krishna as an example. Yeah. Okay. Now, you ready? Dhruva, here. I want Dhruva, hold this. Now,
thank you.
Now, when I called Dhruva, did you feel that?
Yes.
But you knew I meant him.
Yes.
But yet you felt that. So when he, Ajamil, called his son, called Narayana, the Supreme Lord Narayana, felt that. Oh, he's calling me. No, thank you. He felt it. He's calling me. And then Srila Prabhupada explains in an addendum, an extra part of his, at the end of that chapter in the sixth canto, with a point that he that comes from Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur, and Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur gets the point from Srila Sridhar Swami that, and Prabhupada put this point in the verse itself. He says, my devotee is calling for me. He's calling me. It is my duty to give him protection. Ajamil was calling his son, and the way Krishna took it, the Narayan took it, is my devotee is calling for me, and it's my duty to give him protection. Kambada alum saranam vise maho pakayam stana kalapitam jitam sriyad vapin swadhi vevege. Putana king to kill Krishna just as a nurse. And Krishna took it as, he's took one little part, the best part. Now everyone quiet down. Quiet down. Mataji. So Krishna is so kind, so the best habit that we could possibly develop is to always think of him. Because he's so kind. And even if we're not completely successful in our habit, it is the best attempt we can make to always think of him. And in this regard, I would like to point out something that Srila Prabhupada said. And we'll make it easier. Mataji, if you turn around, you'll even be able to see it. We're going to watch something over here. You'll be able to see it, but you'll be able to hear. If you can't see, you can hear. We ready?
Muni mentions this sadhana bhakti in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 1st chapter, 30th verse. He says there to King Yudhishthir, "My dear king, one has to fix his mind on Krishna by any means. That is called Krishna consciousness."
The practice means, somehow or other, you fix up your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, as Maharaj Ambarish did. Savai mana Krishna padarvita. Practice in such a way that you will be able to think of the lotus feet of Krishna 24 hours, without any stop. That is the first class yoga, immediately without first class yoga. You don't have to practice the meditation, samadhi, dhyan, dharana, asana, pranayam, this ashtanga yoga, without practicing ashtanga yoga. You simply practice the one simple thing, simply thinking at the lotus feet of Krishna. All right. Then you become a first class yogi. That is not our statement, it's Krishna's statement. Yoginamati sarvesam. The yoga practice in your Western countries, it is very popular. But that is a fact. Yoga practice is very difficult, especially in these days. Yoga practice was being done in the Satya Yuga. People are very strong, they used to live for many, many years. They could practice yoga. Here, we do not know when it had gone. There is no... At any moment we can die. Padam padam jad vipodam. We are simply in the midst of dangerous conditions. At any moment. Just like when we are coming from the Mr. Chaudhary's house, immediately there would have been a motor accident in this building. Immediately. So, padam padam jad vipodam. Yes, especially in this Kali Yuga, the time is very bad. At any moment, there can be any turmoil and we can die at any moment. Therefore, the recommendation is, Harinama, 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 Yivakivanam, Palamunasri, Unasri, Unasri, Vagadhyantatha. You are chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If I die chanting Hare Krishna, that is very difficult. So, this practice, Kirtaniya Sadahari, this is the only sadhana bhakti. Chantare Hare Krishna mantra, fix up your mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, and it is very easy possible to make your life perfect.
It is the duty of the Acharya, the spiritual master, to find the ways and means for his disciples to fix his mind on Krishna. That is the beginning of sadhana bhakti.
Yes. The acharya, as a spiritual master, duty is to give direction to the disciple how he can fix up his mind always on the lotus feet of Krishna. He knows how to engage a particular devotee in a particular type of service, saparmana tamam bhaccha. There everyone has got some particular talent. It is the duty of the spiritual master to engage his disciples' talent in the service of the Lord, so that constantly he can think of the Lord. This is spiritual master's duty.
They've given us an authorized program for this purpose, centered around the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. This chanting has so much power that it immediately attaches one to Krishna. That is the beginning of sadhana bhakti. Somehow or other, One has to fix his mind on Krishna, the great saint of Rishi Maharaj, a Lord responsible king, fixed his mind on Krishna. And similarly, anyone who tries to fix his mind in this way will very rapidly make progress in successfully reviving his original Krishna consciousness.
Because fixed up mind on the lotus feet of Krishna is yoga. Dhyanam astrita tadvatena manasa paschantidam yoga. Who is yogi? Dhyanam astrita. Always thinking of Krishna. Krishna's lotus feet. Dhyanam astrita tadvatena manasa tadvatena manasa. Absorbed in the thought of Krishna. This is yoga. Somewhere or other, if you fix up your mind, and the lotus feet of Krishna. That is perfection of it. That is the body of the whole time. So, by fixing up your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, immediately you become first class. There is no doubt about it.
There is no doubt about it. And yet, our material minds are so rusty that even when we're chanting Krishna's names, or looking at the deities, or doing some service for Krishna, the mind's tendency is to float away into thinking something in the dream world of our mind. And also when we're trying to do something for Krishna, like chant, or do some or working for Krishna or something, the mind has such a tendency to put me in the center. Instead of thinking with Krishna, with love and devotion, put me in the center. So that is so foolish, missing out on the greatest opportunity to put Krishna in the center. And there's no limitation. There's no limitation one can be doing anything. And if one is deep enough in one's devotion to Krishna, Krishna could be in the center, and one could be doing it for him. And as we heard in a different lecture about Prabhupada would say there is no difficulty. But the difficulty is that we don't want to hurt Krishna in the center. That is the essential problem, and that is the nature of false ego. So we should take advantage of being in the effulgent presence of Sisi Gunatai, Sisi Ramabalabhi, to pray for a little extra mercy so we can think about them. When we stand in front of the deities, I've heard Prabhupada say that we should get an impression in our mind. So when we go about our day, we can be thinking about them and somehow make what we do an offering to them. And when you're offering something to someone, you're thinking about them. I'm doing this for you. Please be pleased by this. And let me do it in such a way that you will be pleased. So Swami Bhuvananda is telling you that what you're doing, and this will come out in the next verse, that what you're doing is not actually pleasing to the Lord. So he said, try to have things such a way that Krishna is pleased by our activities. That the devotees, Krishna, the dear devotees, please. Okay, we're here. Just still a few minutes for questions. Is there any questions?
And you?
Yes. No, first we'll respect the Almighty, and then after the devotee, we'll respect Krishna.
Arjuna is praised for killing millions of people and his pure body, and Guru Maharaj is getting chastised for killing millions of people. So It appears it is possible for a devotee to be a devotee and yet still do things apparently wrong.
Yes.
Whereas we understand that actually a devotee is perfect, yet it seems very important that a devotee understands right and wrong, especially since he's setting an example. So how do we reconcile the difference between a devotee who's doing right and still perfect and a devotee who's doing wrong and is perfect but not?
Well, that's the whole question that the Bhagavad Gita said in Arjuna wanted to do the right thing, but it was against what Krishna wanted. So the ultimate correct thing is that which is pleasing to Krishna. So this is the nimitta kara, bhava sabhi sachin. I want this done. I've come for this purpose actually. He's showing kaloshma, lokeshaya kriti. He's showing the form that is devouring all the armies, literally, in the mouth. So he's come for this purpose and he wanted, they're already gone, they're already killed. But I want you to be my instrument in this. But yet, all the faults that Arjuna saw in the battle of Kurukshetra before the battle took place that caused him to decline, not want to fight, they all occurred. So it's so amazing in one sense that before the battle, all the things that Arjuna said were going to happen that he was feeling so terrible about participating in, then after the battle of Kurukshetra is described in the eighth chapter of the first canto, Yudhisthira Maharaj saw that, look what's happened, all to make me the king. So before he was doubting, Arjuna was doubting, and after it, seeing the killing of millions of people, Yudhisthira Maharaj was doubting, and he couldn't remove the doubt, and even Krishna couldn't remove the doubt. So Krishna, and there's reasons why Krishna sent him to Bhishma Deva. One of them was Krishna wanted to prove that his devotee can do even things that he is unable to do. And what did he say? What did Bhishma Deva say in this regard? He said that this is all the plan of the Lord. This is Krishna's desire. So in one case, it was Krishna's desire. And in this case, it wasn't Krishna's desire. So how do we know what is Krishna's desire? We have Shastra, we have Guru, we have Sadhu. Excuse me, we have Guru, we have Shastra, we have Sadhu, with Shastra right in the middle, because the Guru and the Sadhu refer to Shastra. And this is... And then when we look at the teachings of Rishabdev Maharaj to his sons, I found this very interesting when I studied this part in what canto, raise your hand. What canto? Yes, you are correct. But in the fifth canto. See, because I learned a secret as a teacher, is that if you ask the question, then everyone's going to think about it. The whole room is full of people who are going to think about it. What canto is it? What canto? And if someone says the answer immediately, then they don't think about it. So wait a little while, you see. That's a teacher's secret. Don't tell anyone. So,
One is without agreement,
Yes. First thing he said, after he, not the first thing, but very quickly he said, that I want all you 100 sons to listen to one son whose name was, don't call up, whose name was, raise your hand, But so does that mean, okay, Bharatan says that I'm the ruler now and everyone has to listen to me? No. Then he said, Bharat Maharaj should listen to the Brahmins. Does that mean the Brahmanas rule? No. The best of the Brahmanas, he said, were the Brahmana Vaishnavas, because they've come to the correct conclusion of Shastra. And the Brahmana's business is to know Shastra. Not one little part of Shastra, but or one can do that and then one's a specialist, but all of Shastra. And then when someone comes and asks you a question, you give them an answer based on Shastra. Not, well, I think this and I think that is based on Shastra. And the problems of the Brahmanas are the Brahmana Vaishnavas. So does that mean that the Brahmana Vaishnavas are the rulers and independent? No. Explains that they're listening to Shastra, and Shastra is the words of Krishna. So it's Krishna, again, who's placed at the top. The ruler of society. And everyone takes a position in relationship to being a servant of Krishna. And if everyone's thinking like that, that I'm taking a position as servant of Krishna, then they're always thinking of Krishna, whether they're at the seeming top or at the bottom of the order. The one who's thinking of Krishna is at the top of all of them, because he's the most fortunate person, because Krishna's always thinking about him. So that's the great challenge. So how do we know what to do? What's Krishna's desire or not? We go through this order based on Shastra and based on the servants. Those who are fixed in the service to Krishna know better than we know how to please Krishna. And if we think that no one knows better than us, there we are in the material world. And it's so fortunate, actually, that when the movement began, there was Prabhupada, who was in his 70s already, and everyone else was. I was one of the oldest devotees, physically oldest devotees, when I was 21. So we had Prabhupada, as Ravindra Swarup Prabhu said, Prabhupada was the only adult in the movement at that time. So now there's a full society of elders and seniors and like that, who've been through life already, so who can put the issues of life in perspective for us. Because when you're young, we thought we knew everything already. And because of that, the program told us, but we didn't have the maturity. So there was a lot of trouble caused by the sincere attempt to follow even what Prabhupada said, which was based on trust, or which was based on rules. But now there's so many devotees who have experience. We have great Mahatmas. There's so many. So it's also fortunate now, too, because we don't have to learn everything the hard way by making mistakes. Yes, Christine, you have a question, and then we'll have to end here because it's already late.
As you said in the end, what was Dhruva?
Wait, a little bit slower, please.
As you said in the end, why was Dhruva acting as the Lord didn't like?
Yes.
Why was he fighting with the Yakshas?
Good question. There are two ways to look at it. One way is that there's an inspiration from Krishna so that we can learn from his mistakes. point we're hearing this, the instructions that Swayambhuva Manu has given him, and we are learning. So that Krishna has inspired him in that way. And another way to look at it is that we see the danger of anger and the danger of being very, very powerful because you've been acting in such a way and cause trouble to others, which will be displeasing to Krishna. So when we have power, we should always be very careful how we use it. So that's another thing, because if we take it from the point of view that Dhruva actually got angry, and it's very interesting. And there's another reason why he got angry. Because what happened? What was the cause of him going to the forest originally? What was the cause of him going to the forest? He wanted a kingdom. And why did he want that kingdom? It's because he was insulted by his stepmother, half-mother, stepmother. And why did he wanted to do that? Because Uttama was the son, her son, was on the throne. So Dhruva could have been very angry at Uttama, because he was going to be the king. So this actually comes out, it's in the next verse. Is that he was, in one sense, he was showing that he loved his brother. So therefore, when his brother was killed by these yakshas, he wanted to retaliate just naturally to show that he loved him. So there's many, many reasons. Okay, even though that was the last question, we cannot resist asking Hayagriva for this very, very deep question.
Why did Dhruva kill so many yakshas? Only some of the yakshas killed Uttama.
Because of anger. When one is angry, one is capable of doing anything terrible. So therefore the devotees, they don't want to be controlled by anger and lust and greed, etc. Because they will lose the great jewel of their Krishna consciousness, overpowered by these very strong forces. They're like whips that will beat us. When one is angry, of course, none of you have ever experienced this. But when one is angry, one is capable of doing anything, saying anything. Do you sometimes get angry? No. No. Do you sometimes get angry?
Yeah.
Yeah? You know, Krishna also gets angry. You know that? He gets angry when someone tries to harm his devotees. He actually gets angry. Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah.